It's rematch time. It's rivalry time. It is Beat LA time. Get ready for Suns Lakers with me right away up next on Locked On Suns.
Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, credentialed media covering the Suns the past five seasons. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen every single morning. Follow the show on Twitter if you do not already, at Locked On PHX Suns. Follow me on Twitter if you'd like as well, at Brendan Kleen 14. And it is game day. Suns Lakers, for the first time since the first round last postseason, should be a fun one. A lot to get to in today's show. Preview thoughts on that game and that matchup based on what we saw in the Lakers opener. More on DeAndre Ayton after we got lucky enough to hear from the big fella during post-game press conferences after last night's game. And first, a quick bit of news here as the Suns sign a two-way player, a fairly unknown two-way player, so I want to hit that first. Before we get to that, though, today's episode of Locked On Suns brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center in each of our communities. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Ish Wainwright is the newest two-way player for the Phoenix Suns. That news coming via Adrian Wojnarowski. Ish Wainwright is 27 years old. He is most recently a member of the Raptors Summer League team and went to training camp with the Raptors as well. And I'll give you his stats in a second, but few things right off the top. He went to Baylor and he has been overseas prior to that opportunity with Toronto. A few things to know there. The Suns have a few guys, most notably Ryan Resch, in their front office who were at Baylor. Ryan, prior to coming to the Suns back in 2016 as an intern under Jake Luce in the analytics department, was a graduate assistant for the Baylor men's basketball team. He was also the manager of the Baylor men's basketball team. So he was there just about all of Ish's tenure at Baylor. That connection is clearly probably played a role in why they wanted to go out and get Ish. The other one, courtesy of David Nash, a fount of wisdom as always, is that the agent for one Ish Wainwright just so happens to be the same agent who represents, drumroll, Thaddeus Young, who, if you may have been flipping through box scores last night as the NBA's big kickoff night went on, you might have noticed did not play in the Spurs opener, did not play a single minute. A DNP CD, I've been talking all offseason about. Part of the reason that that Young thing made so much sense to me is that the Spurs did not seem to have much of a need for him. Now, they are not tanking, but they just want to develop their younger players. They have Keldon Johnson, they have Jakob Poeltl, they have these younger guys who they want to continue to groom, and Thad doesn't necessarily fit into that, and he's made no qualms about his displeasure there. So, I just think that those are dots that should be connected. But aside from that, because we also had Mike Schmitz of ESPN, who is a local, for those of you who did not know. Mike is a closet Suns fan. I don't know if he still is, but he did give his seal of approval for this deal, saying that Ish is a rotation-level NBA player, and the Suns are getting him on, again, a two-way contract, so they're not filling that second or that final regular roster spot. They are filling their second two-way slot next to Chandler Hutchison, which means that Ish is now eligible to be active for up to 50 regular season games. He's eligible to practice with the Suns from time to time, and he will likely spend a few weeks and games with a G League franchise to be determined. Of course, the Suns don't have theirs anymore, but this is a player who I think we should be taking pretty seriously as somebody who could make a difference, make, you know, maybe become a success story. If anyone's wondering, also, Ish is Ugandan, and Mike Schmitz has, he's actually, another bizarre Mike Schmitz fact is he is a assistant coach for the Ugandan national team. So that would be my guess as to where he has seen and gotten to be up close and personal with Ish in the past. So I do take what he's saying pretty seriously. I'm getting the summer league stats here. He had 7 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, shot 33% from deep on 4.2 attempts. So a player who I think could make a difference, a player who at 27 fits a lot of what I was telling you guys back in the summer league days that the Suns were looking for and what we saw them sort of, you know, be connected to on draft night as well, is international talent who, as Ish Wainwright shows, is a little bit older and could potentially contribute right away. So at 27, having experience for 4 or 5 seasons now overseas and summer league and training camp with a good organization like the Raptors, would not be a surprise if we were to see Wainwright be higher, be more developed as a player than someone like a rookie Miles McBride might have been, right? So I think that's something to be optimistic about, and I think that's a lot of why the Suns probably targeted him. The Thad Young connection doesn't hurt either, so of course I'm not going to deny that. I do think that stuff matters. Agent favors, we know these things go on, but it's possible to kill two birds with one stone, to have it really truly be a win-win. It doesn't have to be just the cynical perspective that, oh, they want Thad, so they went out and did this. I don't think that's how we should look at it. And I'll have to eat crow here as well. Two-way player, I've been yelling all offseason about how the Suns are not investing the resources and wasting that opportunity to get a player in the building. They clearly, at the very least, had a plan that they've executed in terms of finding an international player who is a little bit older, who could grow more sooner rather than later for them into somebody potentially who could contribute. I'm not saying that we should expect that right away. I don't want to put those expectations on him or on any of this, that this is a rotation that will be tough to crack. So look, I'm not saying that, but I have to give them the credit where it's due. They figured out a way to execute that strategy and brought a guy in who seems to be getting pretty good marks as he makes his way to the Valley. So more to come previewing the Lakers game right after one quick break from McDonald's. The episode of Locked On Suns today brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect. A place where classmates can meet up for a study group, knowing they'll have dependable Wi-Fi and endless supply of French fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, the home team or the away team can come to recharge as well. It's the place as well where you look forward to stopping on a long road trip to rest your legs and refuel. Out, headed to San Diego this summer with a bunch of friends, and you know exactly what I mean when I say that the halfway trip of a McDonald's burger, fries, whatever it might be, is unlike anything else. It hits the spot in a way nothing else does. You have that just dreariness from the car, and you're hungry for whatever reason. Even if you just ate, you always have that hunger on a road trip. You get in, you order, you sit down, take a load off, and it is delicious. So head to your local McDonald's right now to refuel and reconnect whenever you need it. Somebody say Locked On Suns watch party. We will see. There is one downtown. I've actually been to it. Maybe we'll head over there one night headed toward the playoffs. Anyway, this show today, Locked On Suns, brought to you by McDonald's. I'm loving it. DeAndre Ayton spoke with us yesterday after the game about his contract situation. No extension, of course. We've been talking about that for weeks now, and I wanted to just tie a bow on it. I said I would try to leave it in the past, and I'll get to that part in a moment, but just to read out to you guys what it is that DeAndre Ayton said. I will say, you know, he took a long time to finally get to the point where he was talking to the media about this situation. He talked, I believe, one of the days prior to the deadline for the extension to be agreed to and then had not talked since that deadline passed. And when he finally came out last night, I will say he was very at ease. He was ready to talk about it. He was not, you know, trying to change the subject or being short with us in any way. He went out of his way to explain and be very genuine and humble. I have to admit, this guy is growing on me the longer that he's around because of those qualities. He's not afraid to at least just, you know, be blunt, be upfront. And I think you guys, as fans, respond to that. I think it's hard not to respond to that. At the very least, somebody who's willing to be honest and explain themselves. And Ayton did all of that. I thought the funniest comment from him was that he said, "There's always something going on with me." And it was like, I don't even think he meant it as a big joke, but it was kind of funny because he was just asked about how he keeps focus after this. And he said, you know, I always kind of perform the best when my back's up against the wall and there's always something going on with me. And I think he's referring to injuries and the bubble, the missed test there, the suspension, of course, in his second season and all of these different things. And I mean, to me, that's just a dose of humility. And I think you can't help but just believe a guy when he's just, you know, getting right to the heart of something in that way. So, you know, talked about being able to control what he can control. He said, "If you've been following me," this is the full quote, "for a long time, I've always hit rock bottom. There's always something up with me. But to be honest, I play to the best of my ability when my back's against the wall. I know the true meaning of professionalism. And when I'm between these lines, nothing else matters." I think this backs up what I've felt for a while. I also think it backs up what we saw from him on the court, which is that early in the game when they were getting him the ball and probably intentionally doing that to pump him up in a way, he was dominant. He was looking exactly like playoff Ayton, the guy we came to expect that from during the postseason. And so that supports the idea that he'll be just fine moving on and just dealing with it as it comes, you know, beat by beat this season. I don't think it's going to be a distraction. I also think he's a guy, like that comment suggests, who's externally motivated. That back against the wall mentality, that sort of chip on his shoulder dating back probably all the way to when he went number one overall and everybody gave him crap, including me, for months and months and months, and that still continues. I'd imagine that's a part of how he motivates himself, and I think this can act as part of that. And I think you just got to believe him until we see otherwise. He played really well last night for the most part, at least during the competitive portion of the game before the entire team started playing like garbage. But at the beginning, when they took their lead, he was a big part of that. And I'm not going to lower expectations, but I do think filling his role and continuing to develop is all you can really ask of this guy. On the other hand, he was asked, did this affect how he saw his teammates, the fact that Mikhail and Landry did get their extensions while he didn't, and is any of that going to get in the way? Even, you know, obviously looking at Cameron Payne and Chris Paul, who were re-signed, Devin Booker got his max, any of that stuff. And he said, quote, "Things like that are beyond us. We don't really talk about that. We're just keeping each other accountable, working hard and bettering ourselves. All of that other stuff, we let our agents handle it. Things are going to fall in place, but at the end of the day, you have to work." I just think that this is going to be business as usual. I don't buy that he didn't talk about it one bit with his teammates. That seems a little bit hard to believe to me. I mean, this is something I know he's close with Mikhail to an extent. Those guys came up together and we know that they've kind of pushed one another as players. So I don't buy that it never came up. We know from Chris Paul's comments that he has been in DeAndre's ear to an extent, telling him we're going to get you paid and trying to give a little bit of wisdom as to how to move on from it. Chris has been open about his comments. I'm not saying that they're talking about it constantly, but I do think it's come up, and that's natural and normal. And so as long as it's not going to affect anything, and we have no reason to believe that it will, I just don't have it in me to start making a huge thing out of the fact that DeAndre may or may not be motivated. Is this going to be a lingering fact in his mind? Any of that? I can't say it until I see it, and we just haven't seen it. So I saw people continuing to talk about it today. I'm sure you all are thinking it as you're watching. Oh, here we go. You know, I'm not going to do that. So again, tying a bow on it, tossing it away, and hopefully it's something that only comes up when it really has to, when we actually are talking about contracts, when there is actually a moment where somebody in this organization discusses the contract or his motivation or his focus or any of that stuff. Until then, I am not going to microanalyze every game by game whether DeAndre Ayton is in his own head about this extension or not. I think it's not going to be up for discussion again for 8-9 months, and I'll take him at his word that it's truly going to end there. All right, final thoughts heading into Lakers-Suns, a rematch of the Suns' first round series win last year, and our first look at the Russell Westbrook Lakers. We'll get into all of that in just 1 second. First, though, a quick word from Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the planet, the healthiest candy bar on the planet, covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, not like those bricks, chalky bricks that you get elsewhere. Built Bar is delicious. They have 9 or so consistent flavors, and then every so often they'll toss out a seasonal favorite like cookie dough chunk, which is delicious, which tastes like, what is it, a crunch, or what is the cookie dough candy bar? I don't even know. It makes me wonder if there is one. Maybe Built Bar created this from scratch. Whatever it is delicious, and I have devoured my entire box. You can find all of it at built.com. They're all going to be less than 5 grams of sugar, all going to be less than 180 calories, and they're all going to be delicious. Whatever you love, there will be a flavor for you, or you can always go back to those seasonals and try something new. Go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. All right, Lakers Suns. Game two for both teams. Lakers have had a little bit of extra rest, although I don't think that really matters all of that much. They are dealing with some injuries. Kendrick Nunn, Trevor Ariza, both out. Talen Horton-Tucker did not play in the opening night game. I don't think that their status has been decided as of about 5 or so in the evening here on Thursday when I'm recording. So I'm going to go ahead and assume none of those guys play once again. And frankly, I don't think it matters if they do, because that's the place to start. This team in a 121-114 loss to the Warriors on opening night looked all out of sorts. And I don't necessarily think you can blame all of that on Russell Westbrook, but it certainly didn't help. He was 4 of 13, 4 turnovers, only 4 assists, did not look like the impactful box score stuffer that we are used to seeing by any means. So again, I don't think it's all him. This team just doesn't have a rotation. I'm talking about this with Jackson Frank earlier in the week, previewing the top of the league and where the Suns sat in terms of NBA contenders. And we got to the Lakers and we couldn't even agree on who the 5 were going to be that the Suns were going to close, or that the Lakers were going to close games with. We couldn't even come to a consensus. I had Horton-Tucker and maybe Nunn. Jackson was saying, no, it'll be Malik Monk, who only played 19 minutes in this game, and Trevor Ariza, who hasn't had a fully healthy season in years. So that's the main issue. I mean, Russ needs to figure his role out, and him and LeBron need to figure some things out before too long, and I think that they will acclimate to one another. But you had each of those guys stationed off spacing the floor. This team and every LeBron team is really not often going to have a lot of off-ball movement for their star players. It's really, you know, simple pick and roll, simple post up, one action sets that just get a player in position to score. There isn't a lot of sophistication to their offense, and so that's the inevitable problem. That's the reason I was not very optimistic about this team from the jump, is I don't know how LeBron or Russ exist in an offense like that. You've seen how it works with LeBron and AD, because AD can roll to the basket. He can pop out behind the arc. He can ISO himself. He can post up. But Russ is a very, very one-track player in terms of get the ball, go to the basket, or shoot. There isn't a lot of development that we've seen from his game. And so that really was backed up by the opening night performance. The other thing that I saw from that Lakers game is another issue and another reason that people were advocating for them to go and do the Buddy Hield version of their offseason trade with Kyle Kuzma and the like is they don't have shooting, and they traded away a good portion of it with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in this Russell Westbrook deal. He is now in Washington, and you can, you know, we can argue about whether Pope is some sort of knockdown shooter, but during their finals run and at their best, they had him as a player who they trusted to shoot, and he could put up a high volume. He was in the corner. He was pretty good. Defenses at least had to close out to him and look for him in transition. They don't have him anymore. They don't have Danny Green anymore. And even Alex Caruso, who was by no means a high-volume three-point shooter, but at the very least, if he was wide open, as he often was, could make them. Wes Matthews was a player that they had last year who was by no means a knockdown shooter either, but again, can knock them down when he's open and can survive on the other end to an extent. So now those guys have been replaced by Kent Bazemore, by Rajon Rondo again. Avery Bradley was somehow in the opening night rotation after being signed like the day before. Of course, he was in their bubble championship team too, but was not part of their team up until this week. And then Malik Monk, who they don't seem to fully trust yet. He's a defender that is a liability. And so I just think the Suns have the opportunity here to catch this team while it is still getting used to itself, still figuring out who is going to play and how they are going to play. And the Suns should be just saying thank you to the basketball gods as they get ready for this game, that they're catching the Lakers early, because these are teams, I think, that will be vying for, you know, a top seed in the West. I'm not willing to say that the Lakers are going to be worse than that yet, and I think they have the talent that they should be better than most of the Western Conference teams. And so getting this opportunity early to get a tiebreaker win, to get one over on the Lakers, is a real big opportunity. Of course, on the Suns' side of things, they have some things to clean up as well, so I don't want to overlook that necessarily. But the Lakers had 67 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists from LeBron and AD combined. Those guys both shot better than 50% from the field, and they still lost by 7 at home to the Warriors. And Steph didn't even play well. So I think if you're looking at that, and you're looking at how the Suns played, when they opened the game and got out to that big lead over Denver on Wednesday night, they were moving the ball really, really well. And even in the loss, they had 23 assists, which was just shy of Denver's mark. So the ball movement was there when the Suns were rolling. I think if they can, you know, handle the Lakers' tempo, which tends to be a little bit faster and should be even faster with Russ, if the Suns can get into groove there, maybe Cameron Payne plays a little bit more in this game than he did on opening night, and they're still able to move the ball in the half court, I think that's where you can really punish the Lakers. I think Russ is somebody who, you know, defensively, is who does he guard? Probably Chris Paul, maybe a guy like Mikal Bridges. The Lakers' defense is obviously a big question mark right now, and they just let up a 121 mark to the Warriors. So I think that is going to be a key. And the bench as well. This is a Lakers bench that you can certainly attack on the defensive end. Now, Dwight Howard is there, but he only played 13 minutes on opening night, and the rest of these guys are either bad defenders or veterans who you just can't really rely on necessarily right now. It's the five guys off the bench for the Lakers in the first round, or in their first game, was Carmelo, Dwight, Rondo, Bradley, and Monk. That's a very exploitable unit, and so the Suns bench, which had such success and generally created open threes and was able to really get the Suns back in the game in certain moments on offense, that group should be able to punish the Lakers. Now, something I talked about going in when we saw them in the preseason here is the Russell Westbrook factor on the other end of the floor. And that's probably the number one thing I'm going to be watching in this game when the Lakers have the ball, aside from just, you know, how do they play and all that stuff from an identity standpoint, but a matchup standpoint here, when the Suns are defending them, who guards whom? And it is very interesting. We talked about it ad nauseum in the playoffs last year, right? It was, is Jay Crowder going to defend Gasol or Drummond at times? We saw that so that Ayton can defend Davis. I don't think we'll see that level of desperation and adjustment unless AD really, really gets hot in this game. We probably will see a pretty standard, but I'm not even sure what standard looks like. And that's what I'm getting at here. You would think typically if Russ played for a different team that Mikal Bridges would be the guy to guard him. Well, we saw Mikal Bridges be the LeBron defender a lot of the time in the playoffs last year. So, well, if Mikal then has to guard Russ, and okay, well then Jay Crowder probably guards LeBron, well then who guards Anthony Davis? And if you say it's DeAndre Ayton, well, the Lakers are starting big, so that leaves DeAndre Jordan to defend still, and then Dwight Howard at times. So it's probably, I would actually venture to say that Devin Booker is probably going to get the Russell Westbrook matchup, and you'll probably see Chris Paul guard Kent Bazemore, and then Mikal Bridges guard LeBron, Crowder on Davis, and then Ayton as the backline slash DeAndre Jordan defender. I think it's going to be a really interesting chess match. I do think the Suns should win this game. I think they will win this game. I think that they have been very good after losses forever outside of the finals. We don't have to talk about that, but that's not going to linger. They are a very good team after they lose games, and they know this Lakers squad. They have confidence against this Lakers squad, and again, they're catching them while they're still figuring out almost every single part of what they're going to look like this season. So again, predicting a Suns win and hoping for a bounce back. Such an odd game on Wednesday night. 98 points, even when their offense was rolling in the first half and then just falls off a cliff. They don't look anything like themselves. I don't expect that to continue. I think Devin Booker probably starts to look a little more like himself. I do think that will be gradual, but if they can move the ball, continue to generate threes, and take advantage of the Lakers' screwiness right now, they should be in position, in very good position to win this game. All right, enjoy watching, folks. No game recap afterward on Fridays, but I will be back for you after the weekend's worth of games. We also have Portland on Saturday, so plenty to talk about, and I will see you then.